makings of single-hulled crafts, which can result from a wide variety of structural failures or collision with flotsam or other craft, and that the survival rates of crews from sunken boats are hardly reassuring. In comparison, virtually all multi-hulls are built with materials that will float, and they contain no ballast, so the vast majority will not sink even if they are badly hulled. All the research I have done covering every known capsize for decades showed that the survival rate of crews on capsized multi-hulls, and even the salvage rate of the boats themselves, was staggeringly high. Not something found with those who were on monohulls that sank or had gotten rolled over. In these studies, once the worst had happened on a multi-hull and it went upside down, even when a vessel had not been that well prepared, it appeared that multi-hulls still could serve as very stable, incredibly roomy, amazingly well-stocked life rafts. So at base, the case of the Rose Noel was extremely lengthy and might stretch believability, but to me, drifting for 119 days on an overturned multi-hull seemed completely plausible. After all, Maurice and Marilyn Bailey, 117 Days Adrift, Sheridan House publisher, had lived that long with only a life raft and inflatable dinghy as support. It should have been obvious that having a much larger platform filled with tools and food would make the oceanic struggle for survival infinitely easier. Over several decades, I've written several articles supporting the notion that multi-hulled boats, two-hulled catamarans, outriggers and proas, or three-hulled trimarans, are among the safest of ocean-going craft, and the case of the Rose Noel fits both that outlook and what seems logical based on numerous ocean survival case histories. When my wife and I returned from the Caribbean to Maine in the spring of 1990, there, among the pile of mail from our 9 months away, sat a letter from Jim Nalepka, the Minneapolis native who had been aboard Rose Noel. I also learned that a friend of mine knew the skipper, John Glennie, decades ago, and vouched for his competence. These serendipitous coincidences, with which the story of Rose Noel is peppered, were too much for me to ignore. Jim Nalepka had written to me because, shortly after he landed, he had seen a copy of Adrift, which chronicled my own ocean survival drift. He thought I might help him write a book about his experience from the viewpoints of the crew, especially his and his friend Rick's. I knew just how important this event must have been for Jim personally, but I wondered what new dimensions his story would add to the small library of ocean survival books. I didn't want to repeat the themes and issues in Adrift, although I was sure there would have to be some parallels. I was keen to write about the Rose Noel, if for no other reason than to stand testament to the ultimate safety of multi-hulls. But I also wanted this book to be more than a tale of desperation in which the good guys lived in the end. 4 months adrift is a very long time, but durations of survival experiences in and of themselves are only one of their many elements. Frankly, I had very quickly tired of reporters asking me if I had set any records. I had not, unless one multiplies the qualifiers to include a person alone in an inflated raft. I reminded the press constantly that survival is not a sporting event. I also had spoken with numerous other survivors, both oceanic and terrestrial, and found that all experiences are unique, and that some relatively brief survival experiences were in many ways more challenging than some lengthy ones. What is important about an event is not its duration, but what survivors discover from the journey. So I could find out what Jim had discovered. He agreed to travel to Maine. He called it our blind date. We had no idea of what to expect, so we expected nothing from one another. Conversations flowed easily. I liked Jim immediately. Jim did not look like an ocean survivor, but then again, no one really does. Survivors are rarely well-tanned, rippling muscle hunks or sore-covered corpses. Jim's face was somewhat cherubic, his hair thick, his smile shy, his voice soft. He appeared sensitive and easygoing. But two other things really stood out. One was Jim's complete candor. He had an amazing ability not only to see common human frailties in his mates, but also to expose those he found in himself. The other was his wry wit, which often was self-effacing.